so I had studied law and become a referendar. In contrast to the Anglo-Saxon countries, a future judge or administrator in Germany is introduced to the exercise of power immediately after graduation at the age of 22 or 23. As a referendar, roughly like an articled clerk, the word literally means someone who reports to a mentor, he participates in the work of the courts or the civil service, like a judge or administrator, but without responsibility or the power to make decisions, and also without pay. Even so, many judgments are written by referendars, though they are signed by judges, and in the deliberations of the courts, the referendar has the right to be heard, even though he has no vote. This sometimes gives him real influence. At two of the courts where I worked, the judge even let me run the proceedings. This sudden power has a profound effect on a young man who is still living with his parents, and it inevitably influences him deeply. It had two principal effects on me. The first was composure, an attitude of cool, calm, benevolent dryness, perhaps only to be learned behind an official's desk. The second was a certain facility in following official thought processes and legal abstractions. As things turned out, I had little opportunity to exercise either as they were intended. However, the second facility was literally to save the lives of my wife and myself a few years later. My father could not have foreseen that when he ensured that I undertook a course of study preparing me to be a civil servant. Apart from that, I can only smile ruefully when I consider how prepared I was for the adventure that awaited me. I was not prepared at all. I had no skills in boxing or jiu-jitsu, not to mention smuggling, crossing borders illegally, using secret codes, and so on, skills that would have stood me in good stead in the coming years. My spiritual preparation for what was ahead was almost equally inadequate. Is it not said that in peacetime the chiefs of staff always prepare their armies as well as possible for the previous war? I cannot judge the truth of that, but it is certainly true that conscientious parents always educate their sons for the era that is just over. I had all the intellectual endowments to play a decent part in the bourgeois world of the period before 1914. I had an uneasy feeling, based on what I had experienced, that it would not be much help to me. That was all. At best, I smelled a warning whiff of what was about to confront me. But I did not have an intellectual system that would help me deal with it. True, that was not just my situation, but that of my whole generation, and even more the situation of the older generation. It is still the situation of most foreigners, who know about Nazism only from the newspapers and newsreels. Our thinking is usually constrained by a certain civilization in our outlook, in which the basics are unquestioned, and so implicit that they are almost forgotten. When we argued about certain opposites, freedom and slavery, for example, or nationalism and humanism, or individualism and socialism, the discussion always respected certain Christian, humanistic, civilized principles as axiomatic. Even some of those who became Nazis at this time did not fully realize what they were doing. They might think that they stood for nationalism and socialism, were against the Jews and for the pre-1914-18 status quo, and many of them secretly looked forward to a new public adventure, a repeat of 1923. Still, they expected all that to take the humane forms usual in a civilized nation. Most of them would have been deeply shocked if one had suggested that what they really stood for were torture chambers and officially decreed pogroms, to name but two of the most obvious things, and these are certainly not yet the final horrific culmination. Even today there are Nazis who are shocked and alarmed if this is pointed out to them. At that time, I had no strong political views. I even found it difficult to decide whether I was right or left, to use the most general political categories. When I was asked this once in 1932, I answered hesitantly, "Well, probably right." In day-to-day politics, I formed my views according to the circumstances. Sometimes I had no view at all. None of the existing political parties seemed particularly attractive to me, despite the abundant choice. Anyway, belonging to any of them would not have saved me from becoming a Nazi. Ut exemplar docent. What saved me was my nose. I have a fairly well-developed figurative sense of smell, or to put it differently, a sense of the worth or worthlessness of human, moral, political views and attitudes. Most Germans unfortunately lack this sense almost completely. The cleverest of them are capable of discussing themselves stupid with their abstractions and deductions, when just using their noses would tell them that something stinks. I had already acquired the habit of using my nose to test the few opinions I held firmly. As for the Nazis, my nose left me with no doubts. It was just tiresome to talk about which of their alleged goals and intentions was still acceptable, or even historically justified, when all of it stank. How it stank! That the Nazis were enemies, my enemies, and the enemies of all I held dear, was crystal clear to me from the outset. What was not at all clear to me was what terrible enemies they would turn out to be. I was inclined not to take them seriously, a common attitude among their inexperienced opponents, which helped them a lot, and still helps them. There are few things as comic as the calm, superior indifference with which I and those like me watched the beginnings of the Nazi revolution in Germany, as if from a box at the theatre. It was, after all, a movement with the declared intention of doing away with us. Perhaps the only comparably comic thing is the way that now, years later, Europe is permitting itself exactly the same indifferent attitude, as though it were a superior, amused onlooker, while the Nazis are already setting it alight at all four corners.